The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Well, Euro 2020, even though it's 2021, is well underway. Also, GAA action in Croke Park this weekend with over 2,000 spectators expected to be in attendance. And of course, the US Open teed off yesterday at Torrey Pines in San Diego in California. To talk about all the sporting action, we've got Owen Sheen's off the ball zone. Sheen. Owen, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, I suppose the big one today will be England and Scotland in Wembley. You know, you look at it objectively, you say, of course England will win.
Yeah, and I think they were quite impressive in their win against Croatia last weekend. Croatia, on paper, looked like the second best team in this group. So as a result, England should be able to beat Scotland because they're still at home. Scotland, as we saw against Czech Republic the other day, are probably weaker than Croatia. But that's only on paper, really. We have to factor in the fact that Croatia were really bad last Sunday. They didn't really land a glove on England, to be fair. And also that Scotland were a little bit unlucky against Czech Republic. I think Patrick Schick's goal was absolutely incredible and he deserves credit for it. But Scotland at the other end of the pitch could have had a couple of goals themselves. They could be coming into this game in a very different place. Then you throw in the whole other aspect of this, which is the, I guess, the history between England and Scotland, the tension that might actually be there in Wembley tonight. And it is impossible to go anywhere without seeing some reference to Euro 96. I think it's been shoved in our faces quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, considering this is essentially a home tournament for England anyway. And then, of course, you've got Gazza's goal and McAllister's missed penalty, which become extra prescient for tonight's game as well. So it's a nostalgia-filled build-up, and that might seep into the camps a little bit. But you're right, England are heavy favourites for this game, and it would be a shock to see Scotland beat them. But they would take a draw without question.
Yeah, the suggestion earlier on breakfast that I think it was from Pat Nevin, that if you fire up your Scottish team too much, you'll have a blizzard of yellow cards and red cards.
It's true.
And that might put an end to the whole thing. I feel very sorry for Denmark.
Yeah, how can you not, really, after, I guess, what's been just this incredibly harrowing 5 days for Danish football. First of all, they can feel a sense of injustice about how things happened after the Eriksen collapse last Saturday. The way they kind of were backed into a corner by UEFA with those two options and having to play that game against Finland. And then last night, where they deserved so much more in that game against Belgium. 21 shots to Belgium's 6. Now only 5 of them were on target, and that probably explains why the Danish didn't manage to convert an extra chance. But they had enough of the ball to cause Belgium more problems, to go 2-0 up in those early stages, and they came out of the blocks on fire last night. It looked like Belgium just simply could not handle them. Now the problem is, when you don't put a team like Belgium away, they've got incredible players, and off the bench came Kevin De Bruyne, and both of their goals, to be honest, Pat, were sublime. Both of those goals would actually have Belgium immediately in the conversation as potential winners for this tournament. I know they weren't overly impressive, but only themselves and Italy really have looked that awesome at times. Italy maybe over a prolonged period of time in their two games, but they're playing at a different level to a team like Denmark. But God, they were so close to getting something out of that game last night.
Okay, and Netherlands carry on 2-0 against Austria. So one to watch as well.
Yeah, without question. They're really exciting to watch. They're, I'm not sure if you'd be overly excited if you were from the Netherlands. I think you would absolutely take boring 1-0 draws. These games have been anything but boring. Last night's game maybe wasn't high on quality from an Austrian perspective, but there's enough chaos about this Dutch team to suggest that they will collapse at some point later in the tournament. They've got one of the easiest draws in the tournament. They've got the easiest draw of any of the top-tier nations, and they will more than likely get to a quarter-final at this year's competition. But there you suspect things might get a little bit trickier for them, and they might come unstuck. But then again, these tournaments can whip up strange momentum at times. And like Denzel Dumfries, for example, who is their right wing back, has been one of the players of the tournament so far. Maybe not a lot of people pre-tournament would have been watching a lot of PSV Eindhoven and seeing him flying up the wing for them. He has been flying for them in this year's tournament. And to add to the likes of De Ligt and De Jong playing their first major tournament, this is a team that you can make a real argument about that will grow into this tournament. But they do have easy fixtures, and that is why we're seeing positive results.
This time next week, we'll have much more clarity as to where all of this is heading. In the meantime, spectators back in Croker.
Yeah, 3,000 fans set to go to the Camogie final this Sunday, which is a bit of a novel throw-in time as well for a big GAA match. It's a 7:30 throw-in time between Kilkenny and Galway, and it's a cracking occasion, not just because of the fans, but because this is the All-Ireland finalists from last year. This is almost the modern Camogie rivalry that seems to be dominating proceedings at the moment. Kilkenny and Galway, they are the two best teams in the country. At the same time, they've both been put under pressure on multiple occasions over the last little while. Dublin and Limerick and Tip will all feel that they could have given Kilkenny a proper rattle results-wise over the last little while. And Galway as well have been involved in a few great games. So they're not by any means the two counties running away from the pack, but they are still the two best teams. And in front of a crowd and four honours this Sunday, it should be a great occasion.
Yeah. In GAA still, we'll talk about Killian O'Connor. He's out for Mayo. It would be a terrible tragedy for Killian if Mayo went on to win the All-Ireland without him.
It would be an absolute shock, though, if they were to go on and win the All-Ireland without him. It's like, I mean, when you do that damage to your Achilles in a season where it's all going to be so compressed, you immediately think that the season is under threat. Mayo will obviously have to get through Galway or Roscommon, more than likely, to win a Connacht title. Without Killian O'Connor, they possibly feel they can do that. Then, though, if they get out of Connacht, their All-Ireland semi-final would more than likely be against Dublin. And can Mayo beat Dublin without Killian O'Connor? I don't think too many people will give them a chance, unfortunately. He has become their totemic forward in the best way possible. He will go down as one of the best forwards ever, which maybe he gets underappreciated in that sort of conversation a little bit. But last winter, he was on fire. He was incredible when it came to his goal scoring as well as his on-the-money free-taking. So he's a massive loss. There's no way of dressing this up for Mayo. It is bad news for them.
Now, we talk about golf and Rory McIlroy. I was reminded from his remarks about being, you know, trying to get that sense of indifference. You know, would he, as a 22-year-old, just give it a go, give it a lash. Who cares? You always are offered the job that you don't really want. And the one you desperately want, you never get, because desperation is not an attractive characteristic for a job interviewer to observe. So, has he captured that indifference that might lead him to greatness this weekend?
I think after some of his opening rounds at previous majors, I think a top 11 start to a major is something he definitely would have taken pre-tournament. It's just very hard to know before any of these weeks start whether or not what Rory is saying is actually going to manifest on the golf course, because he has constantly said this about just letting his flow do the work, not thinking too much about things. It's been something that he's been working hard at for the last number of years. But a 1-under round yesterday is not bad whatsoever. The leader currently, or the clubhouse leader I should say, is Russell Henley. The first round technically not finished just yet. Louis Westhuizen is also on 4-under par alongside Henley, and he's got another couple of holes left to play. The round obviously started late yesterday due to fog and then due to darkness at the end of the day. That's why a number of players didn't get fully completed. But Rory McIlroy, as you say, he is in contention. There's no other way of dressing this up. Shane Lowry is two shots further back. He's 1-over par in a tie for 41st, so he's only 5 strokes off the lead. So very much all to play for, yeah, in what is a classic US Open.
If you think of that anomalous, what was it, triple bogey that Shane Lowry had.
Yeah.
I mean, if you could have subtracted that from the round and just given him a par on that one, he'd be well in contention. So, yeah. But these things happen in golf.
They do. And unfortunately, there'll be every other player out there will feel they left a few shots behind them. But the leaderboard is shaping up really nicely. Like, I mean, if you're looking just behind the leaders, you've got Francesco Molinari at 3-under par. And then you've got a really tasty group at 2-under, the likes of Brooks Koepka, Xander Schauffele, and John Rahm and Hideki Matsuyama, all on 2-under par. And then you've got the group involving Rory McIlroy just below that. So this is trending nicely towards what should be a pretty good weekend of golf at Torrey Pines.
And let's hope the weather stays fine so we can all see it through the fog late on Sunday night. Owen, thank you very much for joining us. Owen Sheehan of Off the Ball. We'll have news next.